This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday for another hour of old-time radio. We'll begin this week with Cavalcade of America and Diary of a Saboteur, their episode from March 1st, 1943. Then it's Believe It or Not with Ritual of Pain. Finish off with Rocky Fortune and Rocket Racket, their episode from March 23rd, 1954.
Through Chemistry.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company. Tonight we present a new radio play, The Diary of a Saboteur, written by Peter Lyon, especially for Cavalcade. A play that might be taking place in your own hometown. Starring Joseph Schildkraut as the Nazi secret agent and Mildred Natwick as a New England shopkeeper in Diary of a Saboteur on the Cavalcade of America. Psychologisches Laboratorium, the psychological laboratory of the Nazi Third Reich, with offices at Lehrte Strasse 58, Berlin, commanded by General Hans von Horst. Let us imagine it is 1939 and that an agent named Karl Ritter is summoned to the office of General von Horst. Their conversation would have gone somewhat along these lines.
Karl Ritter reporting, sir. Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler, Captain Ritter. You must stand at ease.
Thank you.
Miss Ernst.
Yes, Herr General?
Bring me the Ritter file.
Thank you, General.
Have a seat, Ritter.
Thank you.
You may smoke if you wish.
Thank you, sir.
Here's the Ritter file, sir.
Thanks. Now, that's all for the moment. Karl Friedrich Ritter. Correct?
Correct, sir.
2 years special study at the psychological laboratory. Doesn't list your curriculum, Captain.
Psychoanalysis, personality study, national psychology and propaganda techniques were the courses emphasized, sir. Oh, and the usual subsidiary work in social organization.
Now, how about oratory? I mean, platform technique.
Oh, yes, of course, sir. 6 months. Of course, I took the preliminary basic year of chemistry, code, shortwave radio, microphotography.
Yes. Ritter, you still have your American citizenship, I hope.
Why, yes, sir. Am I being sent back to America?
At once. You are to concentrate on all our general directives of the moment. Anti-Semitism, of course.
Yes.
Usual emphasis on the menace of Bolshevism. You read Goebbels' last speech?
Yes, sir.
Then you know our general line.
Quite.
I don't need to tailor the specialized angles, the possibility of playing on the theme of white supremacy over the Negroes, attacks on the president, or utilization of our various organizations in America, all our usual Nazi tactics.
Quite. Oh, can I get a list of those of our people over there that I'm to see?
Well, speak to Miss Ernst about it on your way out.
Yes, sir.
And she has some money for you and the usual credentials. Automobile license, social security card.
Good. Any specific instructions, sir?
Yes. You're getting a ticket to Montreal for two reasons. First, we can hope that the FBI will miss you that way. Second, because I want you to get me some information almost immediately, even before you get to New York.
Yes, sir.
On your way from Montreal to New York, I want you to stop off in New England. In Mill City, to be precise.
Mill City.
We have learned of a tremendous new factory being built there for some entirely new weapon. It is, of course, inconceivable that these Americans have developed a weapon which we have not already in our arsenal.
Of course.
Yes. Nevertheless, I want you to investigate not only this factory, but its products. In New York, you will get in touch with a courier appointed to you, and he will transmit your findings. Understood?
Completely, sir. And when I'm in New York?
You will do everything in your power to ensure American neutrality when the war breaks out, particularly set the Bundists right. This is of vital importance. You will get all the money you need for the work. It must be incessant, plentiful, and effective.
Right, sir. And when, or rather, if I am unable to continue that sort of work?
You will decide about that when the occasion arises.
Right, sir.
That's all. See Miss Ernst on your way out. But remember, your first assignment is in Mill City.
Hi, Hitler.
Hi, Hitler.
Hi.
northeast area. Action order. German agent landed Montreal today. Traveling name Miller. Believed headed New York. Imperative New York check and watch. Description unavailable.
Morning, sir.
Good morning.
What can I do for you?
I'm looking for a special cigar, ma'am, a kind that I rather like the...
What's the name of them?
The name... Oh, there, right there, there in this box.
That box? There ain't nothing special about this cigar. I reckon every cigar store in Mill City carries this cigar.
Oh.
How many do you want, mister?
Oh, a half a dozen will do. Thank you. A lot of activity down the street, isn't there?
Yeah.
Looks like a new factory going up.
Yep.
One of them defense factories, I take it.
Yep.
Well, I guess the city feels pretty good about getting this new business. It means you sell more papers and cigars, too, doesn't it?
Likely.
Tell me, what are they going to be making in that factory?
They ain't taken me into their confidence on that point yet, mister.
Well, man, you don't need to bite my head off. Don't make me sound as if I were a spy or something.
Can't be too sure these days, can you? You thinking of getting a job there?
Well, no, not exactly. You see, I'm a salesman. And I was just curious to find out if this factory there is going to be the kind that would need some of my product, maybe.
Well, if it's the kind of goods to help make tank busters, you've got a client.
Tank busters, is it?
That's what they say.
Mm. Well, I guess I'd better look up the plant manager right away. Thank you. Good afternoon.
This is not an action order. German agent Miller arrived in New York City today. Believe planning to register at Van Dorf Hotel. We are checking associates. More later.
Mr. Evans.
Yes, sir. I should like a corner suite, please, on about the 10th floor.
Yes.
I expect to be here indefinitely. Here's my card.
Thank you, sir.
You can attend to any financial questions through my bankers, the Export Mercantile on Wall Street. I shall want an extra and private telephone put in my sitting room. Can you attend to that for me?
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Jensen. Shall I register you under your business address in Stockholm, sir?
Yes, if you please.
Yes, sir. Boy, front. Room 1036.
Come in.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes?
I come for greetings from Rantzau, Berlin, and Hamburg.
Rantzau, Berlin, Hamburg. Oh, good. I was expecting you.
Ah.
I'm Captain Ritter. Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler. My name is, of course, known to you. Well, your arrival is most welcome. Tell me the news. I'm all eagerness. You've heard of our work back in the fatherland, I suppose?
Yes, we've heard of it.
Yes. Things progress. You don't need to worry about us. We are justly proud of our work, I can tell you.
I'm afraid you're alone in your pride, sir.
What?
Shut up. Listen to me. And take both that foolish smile and that fraudulent look of consternation off your face. Your tactics have been wrong, all wrong. From now on, and I want this instruction to be transmitted to all our organizations, when a speaker gets up on an American platform, he's to forget Germany. When a pamphlet comes out, it is to ignore Germany.
Ignore Germany?
Exactly. You heard me. Just that. From now on, in public, you are no longer Germans, understand? You're Americans. Similarly, when you attack something, you attack it as un-American, alien, Jewish, Bolshevist. From now on, you're an American patriot. Understood?
Un-American.
Right.
Yeah, I think I understand, Captain Ritter.
Very well, so much for form. Now as for content. Oh, by the way, you'd better take some note on all these things.
Oh, of course, Captain. If I may just borrow your fountain pen here...
Put that pen down. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be... Here's a pencil. Just let me have that fountain pen, please.
Yes, sure. I'm sure I didn't mean
That's all right, never mind. What was I saying? Oh, yes, the content of your propaganda. Everything your speakers say, every printed word you get out, all must focus on one thing, American neutrality.
Mm.
Implement this general directive with every means at your command. All our energies are to be thrown behind keeping America out of the war until Germany is ready.
What are we to do if such work becomes illegal? If we fail and America goes to war?
Then, my friend, the form of our work changes, but it does not stop.
Changes?
Yes. You see this fountain pen? The one you almost were foolish enough to use a moment ago?
Yes.
Very well. It contains a very interesting chemical arrangement. I have several fountain pens like this one.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have heard about them. It's a thermite bomb, no?
It will burn. Never fear for me, my friend. And I'll get on about your work. I wish to see results immediately. In every sidewalk auditor, every mother's organization, every trade union, even from church pulpits, even from the floor of Congress itself.
Being dragged into war by a government that has been taken over by radicals and aliens. I tell you the truth.
Mothers, we must stand together. Our sons are to be slaughtered on foreign fields for the profits of Jewish bankers. I repeat.
Why, friends, if this keeps up, there won't be any election in November. You can bet on that. Yes, sir. You
listen, pal. Germany will never attack us, and Japan is bogged down in China. We're safe now, and we're safe for years to come.
December 7th, 1941.
Gentlemen, order.
Captain Ritter has the floor.
Gentlemen, as a few of us have known for some weeks now, our work has got to undergo an immediate change. From now on, the emphasis will be all on splitting the United States from Russia and England. All right, everybody. We must take no chances. This meeting will have to break up immediately. At any moment, the FBI may be on our trail. You will know how to get in touch with me at Mill City if you need to. And remember, from now on, we are soldiers of the Third Reich on enemy soil. Our Führer looks to us to fulfill our national socialist destiny. Today, gentlemen, we own Germany. Tomorrow, the world. Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler!
Yes, sir?
Hello, Mrs. Abbott. Well, well, well. I guess you don't remember me. I came here about a year ago.
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Oh, now we chatted about that factory, don't you remember? Oh, well.
I'm sorry.
Well, no matter. My name is William Miller. I work now over at that same factory.
Do you now?
Yep.
Well, welcome to Mill City.
Thanks.
This is my daughter, Priscilla, Mr. Miller. She works in a big factory, too.
Hello.
Oh, how do you do? You work in that factory, too, huh?
Well, sure. I'm on the assembly line, the machine shop.
Where?
And this is Clem Hall. He's Priscilla's intended.
Glad to see you, Mr. Miller.
How are you? Congratulations to you both. You work in that big factory, too, do you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's great. Perhaps we can all walk to the plant together this morning, huh?
No, I'm afraid not, Mr. Miller. Priscilla and I are working on the swing shift this week. We aren't going to the plant until tonight.
Oh, I see. Well, that's too bad. Well, some other time. Mrs. Abbott, I'll make it a point to buy all my newspapers and cigarettes right here.
The more the merrier. Come on. Right.
So long, Mrs. Abbott.
Secretly confidential. All FBI regional divisional officers. Report on any trace of Nazi agent Carl Ritter. Alias John Jensen. Alias William Miller. Must get checked soon. Believed to be somewhere in New England. This is imperative. Action order. See file for activities and description.
Well, Mr. Miller, haven't seen you in a dog's age.
Oh, Mrs. Abbott. I've been working pretty hard, I guess.
Keeping you busy, are they? How are things at the plant?
Not so good.
Well, I must say, Mr. Miller, you don't sound so chirky these days.
Well, a lot of us are beginning to ask ourselves, what are we working so hard for? We didn't ask for this war, did we?
Nope, that's right, we didn't.
No.
There's lots of folks don't ask to catch cold either.
That's right.
Wake up on a Sunday morning and sneeze once or twice. There they are with fever and snuffles.
That's right. The war isn't going any too well for us either, Mrs. Abbott. Don't kid yourself. Say, any of your friends got sons in the Navy?
My Dick. He's in it all right.
That's so.
Men in our family have been going to sea for six generations. Lots of folks around here are the same.
Yeah.
Why?
Well,
I wouldn't want to worry you or them for that matter. It's probably nothing.
Why, what is it?
Well, you see, Mrs. Abbott, I got a sister down in Savannah, Georgia. And she wrote me that three ships have put in at the harbor. They're all loaded with coffins.
Coffins?
Hush, yes. They say they've suffered a terrible naval disaster in the North Atlantic, Mrs. Abbott. I guess the government in Washington is trying to hush it up. Well, I suppose that's why they had those ships put in at Savannah, not in Boston or New York. Well, I imagine the government knows best. But it does seem a little bit funny, doesn't it?
Now, Dick was on Atlantic patrol.
Well, I tell you, I wouldn't tell your friends about it, Mrs. Abbott. They just worry.
Oh, Miss Abbott. Oh, hi there, Miller.
Hiya, Clem. Priscilla, around?
Afraid not, Clem. But she said she was going to meet you here at 8 to go to the movies.
Yeah, that's the trouble. I have to break the date. I got to go to a safety committee meeting tonight at the plant.
Well, I'll tell her.
I'd like to leave her a note. Can I borrow a pencil?
Oh, pencil. Oh, I'm sorry, Clem. I lost mine. I was looking for it just a minute ago. Coffins. That's terrible.
What? What's that about coffins?
Oh, nothing. Just a rumor, Clem. I wouldn't spread it.
Oh, a rumor. Oh, say, Miller, you have a pen there. May I borrow it to write Priscilla a note?
Well, this pen? Yeah, but I...
Oh, I won't hurt it. I just want to write a little note.
Well, it's this way, Clem. You see, I'm left-handed, and the point of this pen is delicate. You don't mind, do you? It's a peculiarity of mine.
Oh, all right.
Never mind, Clem. I'll give Priscilla your message.
Oh, you'll excuse me, please. I'm late for an appointment. So long, Clem.
So long, Mrs. Abbott. So long. He's a funny guy.
It's a terrible, shocking thing he told me just before you came. Terrible, shocking thing.
Listening to Joseph Schildkraut as the Nazi agent and Mildred Natwick as a New England shopkeeper in Diary of a Saboteur on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont. It is some weeks after Pearl Harbor, and Carl Ritter, ace Nazi agent carrying out orders from Berlin, has gotten a job at the war plant in Mill City. And now, as our play continues, he is planning with his associates to carry out his work of sabotage.
But you were coming.
Evening, Charlie. Sorry to be late for the meeting. I was over at the cigar store.
Max and Fred are both here.
Oh, hello, Max. Reader. Anything by shortwave?
Berlin wants specifications on the tank buster.
Oh, they do. Something easy, huh?
Mm. It's almost time for another shortwave, Captain Ritter. Radio's tuned in. Want the earphones?
Oh, never mind. Plug in the speaker. Maybe something for all of us.
Okay.
This is Berlin calling.
There they are.
Berlin calling North America. In just a moment, we will bring you the news.
That works, shut up.
But first, we present a musical interlude from the G minor sonata of von Kornfeld.
G minor, this is our
we
message,
bring you the
right.
First movement, marked Andante.
That's it, Andante.
Something important, huh?
Rap, listen. Are you ready, Max?
Yes.
Go on, listen. Turn it off.
Mm.
Well, did you get it, Max?
Yes.
Well, come on, decode it. What's it say?
Right.
Well?
Now I have it. It's an order that the plant must be destroyed.
Oh,
no, this will change our plans.
No, it won't. Our plans are all made. I made them.
What are they?
Oh. This little pen here. I almost had an embarrassing time with it a half hour ago. The boy in the cigar store wanted to borrow it to write a note to his sweetheart.
Yes, but who will plant the pen? You?
No, even that I've planned. I have the perfect dupe to take this little pen in for us.
When?
On our way to the plant tomorrow night. Clem.
Oh, hello, Miller. Going to work?
Yep. Thought I'd look in first, Mrs. Abbott, for a cigar.
Oh, good enough. I'll go with you. I'm going to have my hands full tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Foreman asked me to tell the machine crew the new safety rules.
Well, I guess there's work for all of us these days.
Boy, and you're not kidding. Now, here we are. Go ahead.
Thanks, Clem.
Well, hello, hello.
Howdy, Miss Abbott. Didn't Priscilla get here yet?
Oh, she'll be here any minute.
Now, Mrs. Abbott, I believe I've run up quite a bill at your store the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, don't bother, Mr. Miller. Of course, if you do have a little cash with you, I can always use it.
Well, I have no cash, Mrs. Abbott, but I write you a check. How much does it come to? Papers, magazines, cigars?
Well, it's right here in my account book. Yeah. Oh, let's see. L.M. There, 462.
462. There you are. I think you'll find it's good.
Well, if it isn't, I know where to find you, eh? What's the matter?
Oh, silly, my factory identification badge. I left it at home. Oh, it's... I better run for it.
Hello. So long.
That's funny.
What?
Oh, it's not important. Still.
Oh, Mom.
Hello, Priscilla.
Hello, honey.
Clem, that man Miller just hollered at me that he'd left his pen here.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Sure has a dropsy tonight, ain't he? Oh,
he was running for the bus. He wants you to bring it to him at the plant, Clem.
Okay. What's the matter? You look worried.
Oh, I'm all right. I just don't like that guy.
Don't like him?
Something. Oh, I don't know.
Well, forget him.
Yeah, that's what I'll do.
Well, forget Miller if you want to. But don't forget his pen.
Instant action order. Nazi agent Carl Ritter reported in Milk City. Agents proceed from Boston to New Haven to Milk City at once. Imperative you arrest him when he comes off work. A night shift at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Don't think it was taking a chance on not going to work tonight?
Of course not, you idiot. This way, there can be no suspicion of us.
Yes, but if they find the pen...
Charlie, that thermite will burn the pen so quickly there won't even be a trace of it. Why don't we hear the fire engines? It's 10 minutes late already.
How long a delay did you put in the time mechanism?
Well, it was to go off at midnight. The boy's working on the night shift this week. It's better that way, you know. The fire will have a chance to get really going. Enough chance to get to the turpentine barrels next to the locker room, and after that...
Listen.
Yeah. There they go. Success. That mechanism went off fully 10 minutes ago. Well, that is a fire which is by now well underway. Go on, Charlie. You got 20 minutes to get this.
You hold it all.
Yeah, you go first.
There you got it. Open this door.
Yeah. Ooh, look at that smoke in the sky, kid. Beautiful.
Yes, come on, Rita, we'd better hurry. Huh?
These Americans, they think they can fight a war against
us. We'll miss our train, Rita.
That's right, come on.
What's the hurry for, Rita?
Why, who are you? What's this about?
I said, what's your hurry? Where's the fire, Rita? Is it Jensen, or is it Miller, or is it Miller?
Keep your hands away from your pockets, you there. Just keep holding those suitcases.
I don't know what you're talking about, either of you.
Do you want to tell him, Mrs. Abbott?
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Abbott. What are you doing here so early? Well, who are these men?
Just some gentlemen from the FBI, Mr. What's-your-name.
That's right, Ritter.
FBI.
Come along, both of you. It took a little time, Miller, but we caught up with you.
Very well. But at least I've carried out the orders of my Führer. It'll be some time before you Americans will build any more tank busters in that beautiful plant of yours.
Well, as usual, I guess the lady gets the last word. Go ahead, Mrs. Abbott.
Oh, yes, Rita. We had a little fire in town tonight. Some old newspapers in my backyard.
Why, you're lying. My pen set fire to the plant.
Oh, no, it didn't. You should know better than to make out your check with your right hand when you told Clem and me you were left-handed.
Thank you, Joseph Shilkraut and Mildred Natwick. Before we tell you about our play and star for next week, we have some news that all DuPont workers are proud of. Ted Jewett of the Cavalcade has just returned from a DuPont plant on the Delaware River where he witnessed the presentation of still another Army-Navy E to a DuPont plant. I'm going to ask him to tell you what it's like to attend an E ceremony behind the guarded gates of a chemical plant making materials for war. Yes, I was there, and I can tell you a little of what I saw.
This DuPont plant, among the latest to receive the E, is called the Dye Works because, more perhaps than any other plant in the country, it helped to give the United States a dye industry after the last war. But in this war, it isn't making dyes alone. It's making more than 1,000 products, going either directly or indirectly to the fighting forces. It's grown so that it has its own railroad line, about 25 miles of track within the plant's many acres. That was the thing that excited me in my tour of the plant. A feeling of production on an intensive scale. A feeling that products were literally pouring out of this plant by the trainload. We need production to win the war. This is production, as only Americans can produce. Major General Clifford L. Corbin of the U.S. Army Quartermaster Corps presented the award, and he said in part, I quote, "The output for the military as well as the civilian of hundreds of textile plants is absolutely dependent upon the production of this plant. The management and the employees of this company are producing materials that are just as essential for the war effort as our guns and airplanes. Our meeting today is a tribute to your record. Just as a soldier of the battlefield is decorated for valor and outstanding performance, so you, collectively, today, are being decorated." Unquote. The award was accepted for DuPont by Dr. William Kirk, the plant manager, and W.W. Weatherby, the president of the plant's collective bargaining agency. Now, standing beside me in the studio is a man from the Dye Works who was a member of the employees' committee to receive the Army-Navy E-Pins, Mr. Al Brown. Mr. Brown has been with the DuPont Company for 43 years. Al, how do you feel about this E-Award?
I feel proud, especially when I remember that 25 years ago, the place where the Dye Works now stands was just swampy marshland. And the one big building I worked in 1917 has become 700 buildings today. What a change in the last quarter of a century. In 1920, we shipped 14 million pounds of various dye stuffs. This became 168 million pounds of various finished products in 1940. We began by making dye stuffs. Today, we are making not only dye stuffs, but hundreds of different products to serve American industry in its fight for victory. We're producing all right, day and night. That's all I have to say, except that we're doing everything in our power to back up the fighting men on the fighting fronts. We'll prove that we deserve this Army Navy E by doing our jobs just a little bit better.
Thank you, Al Brown and Ted Jewett. Ladies and gentlemen, the Army-Navy E, about which we've told you tonight, is one of many awarded to DuPont plants across the nation. This is a continued story that will run on for the duration. Part of the story of the wartime work of the plants producing DuPont peacetime better things for better living through chemistry. Finest traditions of the United States Naval Service. All of us thrilled to that citation, heard so often today, but there's one man who would thrill more than any of us could he hear it. He is John Paul Jones, founder of our Navy. It is his story that Cavalcade brings you next week with Ralph Bellamy as our star. Be with us next week when DuPont again sponsors the Cavalcade of America. Our star will be Ralph Bellamy. Our play, called The 18th Captain, is the exciting and ever-timely story of our Navy's rise to glory. Cavalcade is pleased to remind its listeners that Joseph Schildkraut, heard on tonight's program, is now starring in Uncle Harry, and that Miss Mildred Natwick is co-starring in Noel Coward's Blythe Spirit, both plays currently Broadway successes. Tonight's play, written by Peter Lyon, was based on original material by Michael Sayers and Albert Kahn, authors of the recent bestseller Sabotage. The orchestra and musical score for tonight's program were under the direction of Don Voorhees. This is Clayton Collier sending best wishes from DuPont.
This program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Truth is stranger than fiction, and this is the proof. This is Ripley's Believe It or Not. Tsar Nicholas I of Russia was so moved by a poem read to him by its author, Alexander Polesiev, he began to cry. But in the next moment, the Tsar coldly sentenced the poet to life imprisonment on a charge of treason. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the ritual of pain. A cabinet meeting among the Tobori tribe in the African territory of Chad is anything but quiet and dignified, particularly when it's time to inaugurate a new chieftain. At this important and ceremonial event, the cabinet officers gather round the chief-elect and beat the man with clubs for a solid hour. If he endures the savage clubbing in stoic silence, he's considered by the cabinet to be worthy of the office. Believe it or not.
Here's Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
With the tabloids whispering about unemployment and 24-point headlines, a guy out of work gets the feeling he should grab anything that comes along. So when the kind lady at Uncle's Employment Service hands me a pink slip for an interview, I say yes before I read it. And after I read it, I'm not so sure. Adventurous young man with no family connections, desirous of serving mankind. Exceptional opportunity, unusual pay. Zenith Foundation, 45 Mugman Street. Experimental work, highly dangerous. I locate 45 Mugman Street, which is a shabby little building in a shabby part of town, and I haul myself up five rickety flights to an office with a glass door.
Come in.
Is this the Zenith Foundation?
It could be.
I got a slip.
Just have it. Fortune, huh?
Rocky Fortune.
No family?
None to speak of.
Turn around.
What for?
Because I say so.
Anything you say, pal.
Take out your wallet and toss it here.
Oh, is that kind of dodge, huh? There's only $3 in it.
Take it easy. I have to check it.
Okay, you're holding the artillery.
Let's have a look. No pictures. Home address, 55 Bleakman Street. What kind of a place?
Room and house.
Honorable discharge from the Army. 3 citations. Where?
Anzio.
Health good?
Terrible, but I ignore it.
Driver's license, chauffeur's license, hack, steamfitter's union, maritime card, truckers. You're a drifter, huh?
Yeah, I've been around a lot.
How come?
I get restless. I was born that way.
You go away for a long time ever?
Yeah, 3-4 months.
So nobody would miss you particularly?
Not particularly.
You clean?
You mean jail?
I mean everything. Police record, prints, booked.
Clean.
All right, turn around. Here's your wallet.
$1, $2, $3. Yeah, it's all there.
Okay, Fortune. You can meet the boss.
I'm not so sure I want to. Is this thing legit?
It is not only legitimate, it's top secret. Let's go.
Where?
Utah.
How's that?
That's where the job is, a ranch in the Utah desert.
Oh, I'll pack my stuff and notify the landlady.
You won't need the stuff. We supply the uniforms and equipment. You can write your landlady. It's better that way.
And what'll I tell her?
Tell her you're going away. You're going to go a long ways. You'll be gone for a long time. Tell her you may never come back.
2 hours later, Milton, that's the bum's name, and me are on a plane headed for Utah. I still don't know where or why I'm going or what I do when I get there, but I figure any kind of a job is better than starvation. Besides, I can always quit. I keep telling myself.
Okay, Chester, set it down.
Is that it?
That's it.
Hey, that's pretty deserted. How come they got such a big house on the middle of the desert?
The house belongs to the boss. This is where we get out. Let's go.
We head for a big house. It looks like somebody moved an old castle over from Scotland piece by piece. Out behind the castle is the biggest barn you ever saw. Only something tells me cows can't live on sand, so it must have something else inside. What really gets me, though, is the barbed wire all over the joint. We head for the main entrance.
Halt!
It's okay, Harvey.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Milton.
The boss inside?
Yeah, he's in there with the professor and his secretary.
Well, just go right in.
What a layout.
This way.
Come in.
Well, Milton, I see you found a man.
Now, rock your fortune. This is Colonel Sam Jones.
The Sam Jones? The man who owns half the oil wells?
All the oil wells, boy. All of them.
Oh, glad to know you.
This is Professor von Gluck.
A pleasure, I'm sure.
And Colonel Jones' secretary, Helen, Crandall.
My pleasure.
You're from New York, aren't you?
Brooklyn.
So am I.
Isn't it a small world?
Sure. I think before we continue our discussion, we should inform Mr. Fortune of why he was selected for the job.
By all means. Mr. Fortune, as you know, I'm a wealthy man.
So my broker tells me.
Well, about a year ago, I became interested in science fiction. You know, reading them magazines about rocket ships and men from Mars.
Dimension X.
The only thing is, Mr. Fortune, those magazines are not as far-fetched as you might think.
I'm still with you.
Much of them is devoted to genuine scientific study.
I think you're losing me now.
Well, to put the whole thing into a coyote's ear, I got to reading about the research the Army's doing on space travel.
You mean space travel?
Exactly. For example, did you know that the Army now has a whole department of space medicine? Did you know, sir, that rockets are being devised which have already gotten past the pull of the Earth's gravity?
I seem to remember a picture of some mice in a rocket. They were kind of floating upside down or something.
Exactly. Well, sir, I began corresponding with a magazine telling of my interest. Then one day I saw an article by Professor Van Gluck here announcing a new type rocket ship he'd invented.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Go on, Colonel.
Well, to put the whole thing in a coyote's ear, I decided to devote the remainder of my life to helping develop interplanetary travel.
You just lost me.
I established, with the professor's help, the Zenith American Foundation for the Promotion of Interplanetary Travel, commonly known as ZEPFIT.
ZEPFIT. That's clever. Where do I fit in all this thing?
Well, I'm coming to that, son. Well, sir, it wasn't 6 months before we got the professor's rocket off the drawing board and into the pilot model stage. And that's what we're working on now.
I should explain that the final rocket will be some 20 stories high and will carry a crew of 212. The pilot model is only 3 stories high and carries a crew of 1.
That's you.
No, Mr. Fortune. That's you.
Yeah, well, it's been nice. I enjoyed the plane trip. You got a nice little shack here, and I'll see you around.
Just a minute, Jack. You ain't leaving till the colonel is finished.
Now look, pal.
Now you look.
I'm looking. And I'm staying.
Just hear me out, son.
I got no choice. Continue.
Well, the professor here assures me this model is absolutely foolproof. All you got to do is let us shoot her up to the ionosphere and fall back to Earth.
Fall?
She's equipped with chutes that open when she strikes the Earth's atmosphere.
Colonel.
And in recognition of your service...
I ain't going to do it,
we
Colonel.
Will pay you...
I don't care how much you...
$10,000.
You pay me, I...
In cash.
When do I leave?
You'll do it.
Did you say 10 grand?
Cash.
I'll do it. Colonel, the way me and money have been separated lately, for 10 grand, I'd fly to the moon on a Roman candle.
Good boy. Professor, you've got your man.
That's it. They give me a room with a view of Salt Lake Desert and all the room service I can tolerate. I kind of feel a little tired, so I stretch out for a snooze. And I'm no longer alone. Who's that?
Shh. It's me.
What's the shh about?
I don't want them to hear me.
Who's them?
The professor and Milton.
Well, in that case, maybe you ought to shut the door. Okay, what's on your mind?
I came to warn you.
Okay, warn me.
Get away from here.
I like it here.
They'll kill you.
Yeah, I'm going to die one way or another anyway.
Please, I'm not joking.
Look, Miss Crandall, maybe you better get to the point, huh?
The rocket ship that... Shh. Somebody's coming.
Yeah, let's make like we're necking.
Well, well.
Doesn't anybody ever bother to knock in this joint?
I see you and Miss Crandall are getting acquainted.
I was just showing her a few holes. I used to be a wrestler. Flyweight.
You don't waste much time.
I don't have much time, pal. I may be on my way to Mars in a couple of days.
The professor wants to show you the ship.
Fine. Where to?
Out back in the barn.
We go out into the barn, which is a three-story concrete building with what looks like a silo at one end. We go through five sets of electric doors, and I find out it ain't a wheat silo at all. It's a rocket ship, the same kind you see in the comic books, all shiny and streamlined. So we walk over to the colonel and the professor standing near the platform.
There she is, my boy, the colonel's lady. Named her myself.
It's very nice. Only one thing.
Yeah?
Does it fly?
I love this boy. Son, this ship has inside it the greatest development in engine since Einstein opened the atom. She'll fly from here to eternity if we wanted to.
How about a look inside?
Well, now, I...
Absolutely verboten. I will not risk having any foreign agents steal my design.
Buster, do you remember me? I'm supposed to fly this harpoon.
When the time comes, all you will have to do is step inside. All controls are preset.
Just the same, I'd like to look around.
Absolutely verboten.
Used that before. Okay, but just remember, I might decide to quit.
Mr. Fortune, once I have introduced you to my secret designs for space equipment, it will be too late to quit. You understand?
What the professor means, boy, is once you're in on the secrets, we can't permit you to leave, so it's up to you, Mr. Fortune.
Okay, fellas, I'm in. I go back to my room to think things over. And it occurs to me that maybe I'd better get a gander at the inside of that chromium nightmare out in the barn before I really commit myself on this job. So I wait for dark and then sneak out back. There's a guard standing out outside the hangar, and I strike up a conversation with him.
Halt!
Well, hi, Emil.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Fortune.
Yeah, I left my cigarette case inside. Can I get it?
I guess it's all right. The professor's inside working on the ship.
Thanks, pal. Emil opens the doors, and I go inside. The professor and Milton are inside a little glass office over a drawing board. I can hear him talking as I sneak past.
What do you think, Hans?
Another 100,000 will do it.
You think he'll go for it?
Of course he'll go for it.
Okay, I'll make out the bills of lading. What should I make it?
Titanium and platinum for the preheating coils.
Oh, you better spell it.
I'll write it for you.
Maybe we should lay off. Huh?
Nonsense.
I suppose you're right.
Are the fuel supplies all ready?
I put them in the tanks this morning.
Good. We have to be careful. What was that?
Mice, probably, but sound like somebody in a hangar.
Well, you better check. We can't take a chance at this point.
Okay. Anybody out here? Anybody here? If you're out here, you better come out now or you'll be dead.
The mice they heard was me, and my big feet stumbling up the ladder to the inside of the ship. So I make the rest of the trip with my shoes off. But it's touch and go all the way when Milton starts to climb the ladder behind me. Now there's nothing to do but slip into the cabin of the ship, which is as black as the inside of a ballpoint pen. And I'm praying that Milton will get tired of climbing, but I hear his feet on the iron steps.
You see anything?
Nope.
Well, check the inside of the ship.
Okay. Turn on the lights.
The lights go on, and I dive into a locker marked fuel tank, don't open. I get the lid on just as Milton sticks the muzzle of his .45 into the cabin.
Anybody in here?
You see anything?
It's empty.
All right. Come on down. I'll switch off the lights.
When I hear Milton go down the steps, I strike a match to see where I'm located. I put it out in the biggest hurry since Paul Revere's ride. The fuel tank is loaded to the giblets with sticks of ordinary blasting dynamite. So I climb out and decide maybe I better have a look around, which I do. What I find is so interesting, I don't even notice it when the door of the cabin slides open again.
Okay, Fortune, get him up high.
I thought you left.
I did. But the guard mentioned that you were inside.
You came up quiet as a mouse. Or should I say a rat?
What you say don't matter much, because you won't be able to talk at all pretty soon.
Ah, I see Mr. Fortune has been snooping around.
That's right, pal, and I've seen some pretty fascinating things, too.
Really?
Uh-huh. This is a real crazy rocket ship you got here, man.
In what way, Mr. Fortune?
Well, for instance, you take them bulkheads. They're the first genuine 12-ounce canvas duct bulkheads painted to look like metal I ever seen. Also, they're marked Property Room, Magnum Picture Studios, Incorporated. And you take them 2-foot walls over there, solid tin. Or that phony control room with the stovepipe rocket tubes. This thing's built like a cardboard display model.
Mr. Fortune is very observing.
Ain't he?
A very unfortunate habit.
Very unfortunate.
Very unfortunate for you characters when the colonel finds out you milked him for $5 million to build a ship out of old beer cans.
It would be if he found out, but he won't.
Sooner or later he'll poke around.
No, Mr. Fortune. You see, tomorrow morning we make our test flight.
Pal, you couldn't get this erector set off the ground with a derrick.
We aren't interested in getting it off the ground. You may have noticed the rather unusual fuel we carry, trinitrotoluene, known as TNT.
I begin to see it.
Yes. When the initial rockets go off, there will be a case of acute engine failure. The ship will go up in a cloud of dust, and Milton and I will retire to a small island with $3.5 million to try to figure out what went wrong.
Oh, brother, what a swindle this is.
It is a masterpiece, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was slated to go up in the smoke along with the ship.
Unfortunately, yes. We had to hire someone to make it convincing.
Rocket to the moon, they say. You ought to call it rocket to the morgue.
For you, Mr. Fortune, it will be exactly that. You see, you are going to make the journey as planned.
Milton jabs his persuader in my spine and marches me back to the house. I spend a quiet night staring down the muzzle of a .45. And the first thing in the morning, the professor knocks on the door, lugging what looks like 50 pounds of old inner tubes.
Milton!
Is everything ready?
I informed the colonel we're testing the ship at 8 o'clock. Here, Fortune, climb into this.
What is this?
A spacesuit, complete with two-way radio communication and oxygen. If you press this button, you'll be able to communicate with whomever has the earphones for the receiving set.
That's me.
Yeah, like a walkie-talkie, huh?
Uh-huh.
Here's the receiver, Milton. All right, Mr. Fortune, into the suit.
Now, wait a minute. Is this thing guaranteed to work? A guy can suffocate inside a sack like that.
It will work as long as you will need it, Mr. Fortune. About 1 hour.
Of the Buck Rogers outfit, and Milton screws the aluminum helmet on my head. By the time he gets finished strapping on the lead boots and the oxygen tanks, I look like Martian Sam the Minstrel Man. Milton turns on the oxygen, and we go outside where the colonel and Helen Crandall are waiting for us alongside a jeep.
Good morning, gentlemen. Everything ready for the big moment?
Everything is in order. We've just tested Mr. Fortune's spacesuit.
He seems agitated. What's he saying?
Turn on a two-way receiver and listen on the earphones. What is it, Mr. Fortune?
Get me out of this thing. I can't breathe.
Which is
he? He says he's impatient to start the experiment.
That isn't what I said. Colonel, it's a fraud. They're going to blow this whole thing up.
What's he say?
He says he feels confident he'll make it all the way to the moon.
Bully for him.
Oh, you dirty rotten...
No point in wasting the batteries.
The ship is ready, gentlemen. Shall we go?
Well, now, before we get into the jeep, I think we should drink a toast. I have a small flask here.
That's a good idea. There you are.
To the success of our noble experiment.
Now, to that heroic gentleman who's going to make this historic flight, Mr. Rocky Fortune. Fortune! Fortune! He's driving off!
Archie, come back here. Come back, I warn you.
He's going right through the barbed wire.
So long, Milton.
Get the car after him.
See you on Mars, pal.
I gun the jeep through the barbed wire and make it with a few punches. I take off across the desert until the buggy won't go anymore. And I head for the rocks on foot, which ain't easy when you're wearing lead boots. The trouble with these spacesuits is that you can't get out of them without three mechanics and a blowtorch. Anyway, after about 20 minutes of dragging myself along, I'm surprised to contact what looks like a human being, but I can't be sure.
Easy there, Minnie. Easy, girl. Let's just settle down here and cook up some grub. Sure gets lonesome prospecting out in these rocks, huh, girl? Yes, sir. 3 months on this desert, a man's liable to start seeing things.
Hey!
What's that?
It's me!
Holy smokes, the Martians have landed. Take to the hills.
Oh, the pup, get me out of this suit.
Hey, we got to keep calm, Minnie. Maybe it's a friendly Martian.
Of course I'm friendly. Get me out of this suit.
Sure does talk funny.
Meet the Earthman. Friend, you got that me, Earthman.
He's
friend.
Fighting to my knife, Minnie. What do you suppose he wants?
Get me out of the suit before I suffocate. The oxygen's running out.
I can't understand your lingo, Mr. Martian.
I'm suffocating. Help!
Why, he's fainted, Minnie.
What do you suppose is the matter with him? Or maybe we'd better get him out of that there crazy suit.
The oxygen gives out, and all of a sudden the world does a quick blackout. When the lights go on inside my brain, I'm flat on my back in very familiar surroundings. Looking down on my baby blues is the ugly face of my good friend Milton. Oh, what happened?
Take it easy, pal. It's coming out of it, Prof.
It's fine.
Oh, you. Where am I now?
In the rocket ship, pal.
The prospect of the desert.
The old prospector took you out of that spacesuit just in time.
How did I get here?
When he saw you were just a man, he tied you to his mule and brought you right to the house. Convenient, huh?
Swell.
So the professor and me took you back into the ship to get you ready for the trip.
Hey, you scum.
Make sure he's tied up, Milton. I'll go down and keep the colonel cooled off.
Right.
And as soon as you get clear of the launching platform, I'll set off the chart.
I hope you don't make it, you punk.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Fortune, bon voyage.
There I am, right back in the soup. The professor goes down the iron ladder and Milton bends over to tie me up. I don't have enough strength left to lick a postage stamp, but I figure it's now or never. So I make the supreme effort.
Hold still.
I'm ticklish.
You won't be for long.
Listen, before you tie me up, one favor, huh?
Now go on.
I'll bend over. I'm too weak to shout.
What's on your mind?
This oxygen tank is on my mind.
What about it?
I'd like to put it on your mind. Don't ask me how I did it, but somehow I managed to tip over one of those iron tanks over into Milton's head. He goes out like a sick firefly. I know I'll never leave the hangar alive, but the professor can help it, so I decide to change clothes with my muscular friend Milton. It takes a couple of seconds, and I pull down the hat, take his gun, and climb down the ladder. 2 seconds later, I'm out of the barn and head for the concrete shelter where the professor and the colonel are going to watch.
Here comes Milton.
We'll give him time to get clear.
I can't understand what made that boy chicken out at the last minute.
We managed to convince him to go through with it.
Colonel, don't let him do it.
Ah, nonsense, girl. This is a historic moment. Ready, Milton? He's waving his hat. Let her go, Professor. Right. Look out! Oh! Everybody all right?
I'm all right.
What happened?
The fuel tanks must have exploded.
Poor Rocky.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, ain't it a shame, though?
What?
Don't move, Herman, or I'll blast your skull.
What's the meaning of this? Fortune, why aren't you on your way to Mars?
I found out I forgot to buy a round-trip ticket, Colonel.
Sir, I demand to
just
know...
Just go over and take a look at that load of junk that this swindler just blew up inside your barn.
Junk, sir? Don't believe you.
These characters swindled you out of $5 million, Colonel. That rocket ship is nothing but paper mache and mucilage.
He's insane.
Am I? Here's a piece of metal that blew out of the barn just a minute ago. Well,
that does look like a part of the tail fin.
Yeah, on one side it looks for real, all shiny silver paint. But if you turn it over, it's the first tail fin you ever saw that says Rappaport Selected Sardines. Let's go, Professor.
What? Why, the boy's absolutely right.
I tried to tell you.
You swindling coyote, I ordered.
Save it, Colonel, save it. The government's got a place for this character. And it ain't built out of old beer cans either.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast include Howard Culber, Don Diamond, Dan Riss, Edith Terry, and William Euler. Tonight's script was written by George Lefferts. Andrew C. Love directed. Now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Did I ever tell you about the time I decided to find a new room because I found out they were using my old mailbox as a numbers drop? Sure, I found a room, all right, but I almost had to give up my lease on life along with the first month's rent, which was payable in blood. Tell you about it next week. See you around.
Thursday, hear the Academy Awards presentation on the NBC Radio Network.
That's going to do it for the show today. I'll be back next Tuesday with more, but there's a lot of old-time radio coming to RelicRadio.com between now and then. There's a new show every day. It's all at RelicRadio.com. You'll also find links at the website to our forum, Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. Visit RelicRadio.com for all of that, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thank you very much to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. The Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.